I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is Curious Mix. Listen in as we meet the people and explore the places and programs celebrating the arts and culture in our communities. Keep your ears open for these sounds and the stories behind them. If you've never thought of dance as a sport, then you've probably never seen Dance Kaleidoscope. The Indianapolis-based professional contemporary dance company blends ballet with the Martha Graham technique to showcase both original and classic dance performances. The 15 male and female dancers are better described as athletes. They leap, jump, bend, lift, and dance with power, poise, and grace. The company, more commonly known as DK, started in 1972, and in 1991, David Hochoy became artistic director. He danced in the Martha Graham Company and longed to stage her iconic piece, Appalachian Spring. The cost of the royalty fees, costumes, and sets kept it out of the company's reach until 2018, when by sheer luck, DK was able to share the costs with another organization and stage it as the season finale. It would also be the last DK performance for dancer Caitlin Negron. After 10 years with the company, the 34-year-old decided it was time to retire. I spent an afternoon in the rehearsal studio with David and Caitlin a week before the performance. Dancers rehearsed the entire piece to music while David took notes that he later shared with Caitlin.
My name is David Hochoy, and I am the artistic director of Dance Kaleidoscope.
I'm Caitlin Negron, and in Appalachian Spring, I'm playing the role of the bride.
Appalachian Spring is a very, very famous ballet. Martha Graham choreographed it in 1944, and she got Aaron Copland to collaborate with her and to do the music. She wanted to do something about the pioneers of settling down in America, the conquering of the wilderness. So basically, it happens on a wedding day where Martha, she gave herself the role of the bride. Martha Graham plays the bride.
David not only danced for Martha, but was her rehearsal director. So he has knowledge of not specifically like doing the role of the bride, but with being in the studio with her, but also sort of sitting beside her in rehearsals and sort of knowing, at least having an idea of what he thought she would want. And he rehearsed Appalachian Spring while Martha was still alive, and so he brings all of that knowledge and history and insight with him.
Okay, second solo. Mm-hmm. So you go, run, 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 sharp. Run, 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 sharp.
Yeah.
Those turns need to be really, those, they say everything about your emotional state. It's a very complex role. It's very layered, I would say. Martha Graham is one of the first women in choreography to say, I'm a woman, and what I feel is important. My feelings are complex. They're not easy to understand, but I think it's important for you to see how I feel. Head, and yeah!
Okay.
You're happy, you're happy, you're happy, you're happy.
I saw this piece first like on a video when I was in college and just loved seeing that, yes, it's a woman playing like a very traditional role of a bride, but she is allowed and given the freedom to show every emotion that goes along with not just maybe getting married, but with so many life decisions.
Yes, keep going. And this one here, I don't need
to... Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Martha choreographed two amazing solos for herself. They are physically, I would say, some of the hardest dancing in the repertory. There's a happy solo, and then there's a solo called the Bumblebee solo, where she's very agitated. She's very questioning about the future.
So you're calm and you're happy and you're kind of giddy and scared and nervous and thoughtful and... It's just It's such a rich role.
The first Fitzgerald was really fantastic.
Okay.
So here's what I want to suggest to you. So it's very important for me to explain all of these things to Caitlin, you know, because I've seen many, many different people do the role, and as well as sat in rehearsals with Martha Graham. I'd have to say I have a pretty strong understanding of, you know, what the role entails and what I'd like to see. And plus, I want to try and help Caitlin bring things out of herself that she wants to put into the role, because that's one of the great things about any kind of good choreography, is that it allows you, the artist, to put something of yourself in it.
I thought when I first started it that, like, I had to draw from, like, absolute, like, my very personal experiences of, like, what did it feel like when I got married? And I actually talked to my husband, Robert. We were talking about it, and he's like, well, isn't this a different person from a different time? And approaching it with the same sort of feelings from the viewpoint of this woman and lived in a very different time than we did, I feel like it helped me into the role.
Yes, Caitlin, that is so much better. Okay. Don't push him away. Not yet, anyway. Wait till the divorce.
Okay. What's so great is David also steps back and just lets you kind of go sometimes for a few rehearsals to find your way through.
It's an, you know, it's a dance of seduction. You ever do that?
I feel like he gives you enough information as you need, and then you kind of walk the path alone, and then he catches up with you and takes you the next part of the way.
It's private, David.
Huh?
It's private.
Well, show me that you have done it. You know, Martha Graham always said to us, in order for any performance to be meaningful, you have to reveal something about yourself to the audience. And I'm hoping that Caitlin gets to the point where she feels confident enough that she can reveal a different part of herself to the audience.
You know, I feel like in a way I've been building toward this for a long time. It feels very full circle, since I saw this piece when I first started to do the Graham technique, and so to do it at the very end of my career, just it feels very cathartic, and it feels like just a really beautiful way to put a bow and a button on the end of me learning and exploring Graham, and then being a part of Dance Kaleidoscope.
Up, lens suspend. Yeah, that's gorgeous. All right, those are all your notes. You did some really fabulous things today.
Thank you.
Caitlin and her husband Robert created and operate the nonprofit group Indie Convergence, which connects artists, dancers, and performers from all backgrounds with communities and businesses through workshops, neighborhood projects, and international outreach. Believe it or not, we are halfway through 2018, and if you are a film fan, you may be satisfied. If you're not, well, we're going to chat with Matt. Matt Soci, the host of Film Sociology. He has a list of some worthwhile films of the first half of 2018 that maybe we should go see or rent.
Yeah, probably rent, because a lot of these films, well, most of these films have already come and gone, so hopefully they will get a second life on home video.
First of all, what's your criteria for selecting these?
They really resonated with me in one way, shape, or form. They stood out amongst everything else that was opening those last couple of weeks. And I look at this list that I have written in front of me, and I would hope that some of these will be in my top 10 by the end of the year. But you know, right now we're in summer blockbuster season, mm-hmm. and then we'll go through a bit of a dry spell, and then November, December will be the big award contenders, and by the end of the year, of course, you know, I'll do a top 10, but I'm hoping some of these at least make the final cut, because some of these are very solid films. They just happen to be released early in the year, so award wise, they might be forgetful, or people may forget about them. I'll try not to.
Okay, give us some that are on your list.
Probably the most recent thing that really resonated with me was a film called First Reformed. Agent, with it stars Ethan Hawke as a small town pastor overshadowed by a mega church. His faith is tested when he meets a parishioner who's got extreme environmental issues.
Explosives.
She was becoming someone I didn't know.
Opportunistic diseases, anarchy, martial law. You will live to see this.
You had no idea that he was thinking of.
No, I'm so frightened.
And it's kind of a test on his faith. He's already reeling from the death of his son, who was killed in combat. And it's written and directed by Paul Schrader, the man who wrote Taxi Driver. He adapted Last Temptation of Christ. He made American Gigolo, Hardcore, Blue Collar. He's kind of my go-to guy if you want to see a film about gentlemen in a downward spiral. And Ethan Hawke, Ethan Hawke's been doing some really interesting work the last few years, and this is one of the best things he's ever done. It is not for the faint of heart when it comes to spirituality, but it asks some serious questions. Another one that's I'm hoping more people get is a film called The Rider.
Just trust me, bro.
There's actually two films involving horses in different ways. The Rider is a story of a young man who had a plate in his head after he was a rodeo rider, and the director wound up using locals, non actors. So there's a really rooted performance. Everybody knows the scenario in southern South Dakota. I compared it to the Darren Aronofsky film The Wrestler, because for a rodeo rider who cannot ride in southern South Dakota, your
what
job
else do you do?
Yeah, exactly. So do you live on your knees, or you die on your feet, or in this case, die in the saddle? And the film addresses that, and I think it addresses it in a really strong way. The other horse film is a thing called Lean on Pete, and I compared it to if Charles Dickens wrote Flicka. Charlie Sumner, who works at a stable, and is one of those kind of low-end horse track stables run by Steve Buscemi.
You should do something else before there's nothing else you can do.
And he gets emotionally attached to a horse, and they eventually ride away, walk away together, and try to have a life of their own. It is harsh at times, and it does not end well. I'll just put it that way. If you know, you didn't get the Charles Dickens reference, then I can't really help you. But
anything with Steve Buscemi, talk about a gifted actor. Just facial expressions alone, doesn't even have to open his mouth. But
yeah, and he gets to do the kind of crusty old timer. Well, he's not that old, but he gets to do the kind of crusty guy who works around the stables and tells the kid not to get emotionally attached to the horses, to which
dun,
the kid
dun,
does.
Dun, dun.
There's a film starring Joaquin Phoenix called You Were Never Really Here, and it's from the woman who directed We Need to Talk About Kevin. He's a professional man for hire who helps rescue kids that are caught in the slave trade, and he's on the job from a well-known politician whose daughter has been submerged in this life.
If she's there, I'll get her.
Cleary said you were brutal.
It can be.
So again, not for everybody, but I think it's one of the more powerful films to come out this year.
You got one more for us?
Yeah, one more. And because these all sound like very dark and veiled, very male oriented. There's a really underrated film called Love After Love. And it's an Indiana gentleman originally from Indiana who directed it. It stars Annie McDowell and Chris O'Dowd.
We can talk, you know?
I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm having an affair.
She's a widow, and she's dealing with life after her husband died, but she also has grown sons to have to deal with. And it's a really wonderful performance from Annie McDowell, who for years has been playing the wife and the mother and the boss, and she gets a lot more to do with this. And this one, not a whole lot of people got to see this, so I'm hoping people will rent it immediately.
Some great suggestions. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
Still to come on Curious Mix, beating the odds.
It's like you think you'll score that giant panda for the wife, except you can't, or not without you drop another 20, and then what? Then you win a thumb-sized monkey or a little comb.
And back to basics.
Nothing with a lot of detail. Just a lot of emotional feel.
I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. Each week, we bring you Making It, audio postcards from DIY artists who are making it on their own. Today, we bring you Tracy James. He makes handcrafted leather goods and teaches classes throughout Indianapolis. WFYI's Melissa Davis met James at his Indianapolis home, where he gave her a lesson, a tour of a studio, and talked about his art.
Hi, Tracy?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Melissa.
Nice to meet you.
Hey, nice to meet you. I'm recording if that's okay.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for doing this.
I craft in my home, in, I guess, my home studio. So it's in the Butler Tarkington area. So it's always beautiful, always, you know, really friendly. And we get the occasional college party. So fun and adulthood mixed in one. So my studio is actually, I guess you can say, the attic. Four stations. So I do live streams on Instagram or Facebook, mostly Facebook, of the builds that I do, so mostly bags. And then people actually get to see, like, what goes into handcrafting a bag or a wallet or what have you, so... It's very interactive. I get a lot of people asking, what are you doing? What is that? What are the tools you're using? Or, like, how are you stitching that? So, like, this wallet, I've actually gotten down to getting it done in about a half an hour. So I actually started off with a bow tie company. And the market got really saturated with people making bow ties. So I decided, okay, like, what is something else that I can do that not very many people do, or that, you know, people may actually be afraid of doing. So I decided that making leather goods was something that not only I bought all the time, but it was something that a lot of people didn't do. And so I actually started off making my own backpacks and stuff. I decided that I was going to start with backpacks and duffel bags. So I don't know. I don't know what made me start there or why, but that's how I started. If I have a knife, a hide of leather, and some thread, I can make it happen.
And how does Indianapolis factor into your art?
Indianapolis is where I was born and raised. So everything from the different people who I surround myself with to my favorite leather shop downtown Indy called Landwerlin. I mean, it's an old-time leather shop. And when you walk in, you feel, you know, that amazing, like, Indiana Midwestern love.
It seems like this kind of crafting is kind of maybe meditative and relaxing. Does it work like that for you?
Absolutely. There's always a rhythm going on, and just being able to make something out of nothing. I can literally sit up here all day, all night, and make and not even realize that, oh, like, I've been up here for 16 hours. I should probably eat something, or, you know, it's, you get in a flow, and it's beautiful, it's relaxing, so yeah. So now I'm just trying to get all the edges, mainly this round part here.
What makes you keep going with your art?
Wow, my customers, the love I receive every time I deliver a product, especially here in Indiana. If people are local, I actually like to go and hand deliver the items because I feel like they not only get to see who I am, but I get to see who they are. And when they see that, oh, wow, like, he's hand delivering this wallet or what have you, there's just that much more love and appreciation that happens.
James not only showed Melissa how to make the wallet, he gave it to her when it was done. You can see a picture of it on our website at wfyi.org/curiousmix. Sometimes a life-altering event is what it takes to clearly see what matters most in life. Curious Mix contributor Lee Dineen reports that that was the case for a new Indianapolis artist.
Matt Hurdle's journey began 16 years ago on a date with a woman who had just had a breast cancer scare. It was her openness that made him mention he had some concern about a mole. The woman emphatically insisted that he make an appointment to have it checked out.
I had just met this person. For some reason, I listened to her and never saw her again. I made the appointment, told her I was going. We never went on another date, but I went to the doctor's appointment, and my doctor, Jeff Wagner, said, she saved your life. It turned out that it was stage 3 and was in my lymph nodes, and if I hadn't listened to this person, I wouldn't have lived. So that kind of started my whole transformation.
Hurdle was enrolled in an early immunotherapy clinical trial for melanoma and was cured. He met his wife, Julie, 30 days after the diagnosis.
I told Julie I never wanted to forget what that felt like first getting diagnosed, being grateful for every minute of every day and the people that I associate with. I'm kind of selective with who I have friendships with and, you know, who and how much time I spend with people. So I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but it was a good thing for me, I think.
And a good thing for Horizon House, an Indianapolis day center for the homeless. It was the middle of winter, and he noticed the charity's urgent request on Facebook for winter clothing. He felt compelled to donate some ski jackets and long underwear.
Oh, there you are. How are you?
Good. Nice to see you.
So good to see you.
Fast forward several years, and on this day, Hurdle is delivering a much-needed case of deodorant to Horizon House Executive Director Teresa Wessel.
I'm an empathic person anyways. But until you're here in the facility and you see the neighbors coming in and you see what the folks at Horizon House do, you don't really feel the impact. And I always like to support those that are doing good things. And I knew I wanted to be connected to it. I didn't want to just donate a check or do something where there was a distance. I actually wanted to see it go to the people that could use it.
He gets it, right? It's really important for us to have our donors and those that are engaged with us, where they truly understand the issue. It's crucial for us to have volunteers such as Matt Hurdle.
Another life-altering event a year and a half ago, retirement, led to a new transformation.
I woke up one morning and I said, I feel like a completely different person. I told Julie I dreamed about painting, and I never painted other than for an art assignment. You know, I took art through college, but I never thought about being a painter, and then I started dreaming about it.
As a child, Hurdle loved to draw. He was comforted by tight, realistic detail as a way to be in control. But his more recent artistic endeavors have taken a totally different direction.
For some reason, I started painting contemporary landscapes or abstract landscapes, nothing with a lot of detail, just a lot of emotional feel, very calm. My paintings, everybody says how calming they are. And I think it was just a right brain thing that I looked at life differently. It wasn't all about the little details. It was more of the feeling that I get out of different things. So I do it every day.
After a few months and feeling good about what he was creating, Hurdle decided to get some feedback from the Hoosier Salon, Indiana's longest-running organization dedicated to promoting the work of Indiana's visual artists.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, nice Matt. How are you?
Good to see you.
Hurdle's work was accepted immediately. Michael Sinan, the gallery manager in Carmel, says it's striking.
We have a few of his pieces here. This is kind of a moodier piece of Matt's here, Freedom Within. It's a 24 by 36 acrylic on canvas. But yeah, they're very, would you say emotional?
They are emotional, I think. Yeah. They're kind of dreamlike, kind of mystifying. And what I like to do, Lee, is not have a lot of detail. I like to leave it up to the imagination of the viewer, and they all see something different.
It's really nice you're hanging here next to Justin Vining in view of the front window. That's got to feel great.
It does feel good. Yeah, I know a lot of times they'll have an easel right up here too, and when I'm on that easel, I think, you know, that's a good accomplishment to be by the front door.
Hurdle is contemplating subjects for paintings to donate for fundraising events, including one for Horizon House. For Curious Mix, I'm Lee Dineen.
How can a poem inspire a visual artist like this? Here's Curious Mix contributor Terry Border.
Since it's now summertime and the fairs and festivals will be making their appearances around town, I found this poem called The Ring Toss Lady Breaks Five by Mark Krashar from his book The Uncertainty Principle. Okay, the ring-tossed lady breaks a five. "It's all a bit rigged," she says. "Bust one wins, high striker, even the dozer. It's like you think you'll score that giant panda for the wife, except you can't, or not without you drop another 20, and then what? Then you win a thumb-sized monkey or a little comb." She hands me five ones and then stands. "She worked the whole midway," she says. "Funnel cake to corn dogs. She's worked every game, plus half the rides, crazy coaster, avalanche, wing ding, tilt-a-whirl. And if there's somebody sick, she'll do a kiddie ride, too. Lil' choo-choo, maybe the teacup." There's a collapsing soft sigh, and she sits, opens a paper, turns a page, and as if she were the one assigned to face forwards, as if it were her job to intuit the world and interpret the news. "Anymore," she says, "it's out of our hands. It's all we can do. It's not up to you. You see that bald bronco tearing tickets at the carousel? We worked the bottle drop, and now he's mine. He's no genius, but he loves me, and he's mine. Things happen," she says. "You can't take them back."
We learn so much about her in that poem, don't we?
Yeah, I think a lot of us know this kind of person. I think it's interesting how, the bald bronco, as she describes the fella, is kind of her prize that she gives away, and she's learned to be happy with him. And she has learned her little wisdom, her life's wisdom, from work in the midway. And I really enjoyed it because of that. And I'm too cheap. I never do the prizes. I'm no good at the ring toss or the basketball free throw thing or anything else, but I enjoy sitting back and watching other people give it a try.
We know where we'll find you at the State Fair.
I will be there in the midway with an elephant ear in my hand.
That's Terry Border. He'll be back with another prize-worthy poem next week. Jennifer Coe is a violinist with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra who loves to perform new music or pair a traditional piece with something contemporary to give it a whole new feel. Curious Mix contributor Michael Toulouse spoke with Coe about her recent performances featuring the work of one of today's most respected women composers.
The first time I heard Kaya Sarriaho's music was her opera, actually, L'Amour de Loin, Love from Afar. And it just completely, it was just so moving to me. And I then kind of did the deep dive into all of her music and saw that she had written a violin concerto and started, it took me several years until I could find a place that would let me play the concerto. But it was really a pleasure. I got to work with LA Philharmonic with Graal Theatre for the first time. The first time I played it was in 2007, And since then, I've recorded it actually with Curtis Institute of Music, their orchestra, which is where I went to school. Mm-hmm. And that's right. Also, I went to school with Karina Kanalakis there and also with Zachary DePew. So we were all violin students at the time.
I want to get on the topic of some other projects that you've done. They span multiple seasons. The one, of course, is Shared Madness, but more recently, there's Limitless on stage together.
All of the pieces in Limitless are actually duos with myself and the composer performing. And it's also an extension of this larger project that I'm doing called the New American Concerto Project, in which I really wanted to reflect what America looks like today. And a lot of that is that, you know, 50% of our population is female. And I really, truly believe that women have something to say as well. So Limitless was majority women composers. But to be honest, I just chose the best composers that could be chosen. What's interesting, actually, is that if you historically look back upon that, you actually see that women were a huge part of performing society during the time of Mozart and of Beethoven. And they've just kind of been written out of history. George Bridgetower, for whom Beethoven wrote the Kreutzer Sonata, and I think they had a falling out over a woman, and then therefore Beethoven rededicated it to Kreutzer, who actually never played the piece. And it was unusual because Beethoven premiered it with Bridgetower, and Bridgetower was of African origin. So there are a lot of intersections that do exist, but we've kind of ignored them historically in classical music.
Orchestras, for the most part, tend to go toward these powerhouse composers and powerhouse works every season, war horses, so to speak. Contemporary composers seem to get short shrift. Do you think that's true? Or
I can say, because I've done a lot of music education, that when I go into schools, kids have a much easier time listening to something that's contemporary because it is of the musical language that they've grown up with, that they've heard in the world. And then you can bring them back, actually, historically, to something like Bach.
I think contemporary music is well represented in the recordings you've made with Sadie, mm-hmm. but this most recent one is Tchaikovsky. And, you know, such a story behind this as well. I would love it if you could explain perhaps this nostalgic touch to this particular recording you made.
I started my career in a way because I won the Tchaikovsky competition. And I then, maybe 5 years ago at this point, worked again with the conductor who conducted me at the Tchaikovsky competition. And we were like, oh my God, we still really sync together musically. This is amazing. So we decided to do all the complete works for violin and orchestra by Tchaikovsky. And in a strange way, I see it as a companion disc to what I'm about to release next November, which is an all Kaija Saariaho CD. So I kind of see it as a pair because they're both quite circular in the sense of there's a sense of return. Yeah. So I actually think they're the perfect pairing.
Boy, I want the bookcase edition. You know, we could have one on one end and the other on the other and all your recordings in between. Well, Jennifer Koh, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today.
Thank you.
Just ahead on Curious Mix, from Dogfight,
which basically is a very mean-spirited competition where Marines would find the ugliest date possible,
to Delight.
There were 18 of them, and I put a row of them on the back of my toilet tank, and I stood back and I said, wow, that looks really good.
Keep listening as Curious Mix continues. We'll be right back. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is Curious Mix. It's time to perk up our palates with a little help from Yelp. The online community of ordinary eaters knows where to find some of the tastiest places in town, including Convivio, where carb lovers can feast on a variety of freshly made pastas.
My name is Andrea Milani, and I'm one of the owners of Convivio. Fresh pasta is obviously, it allows for more creativity because you can make it fresh every day. And the way we make it allows us to have obviously different shapes, more shapes, different flavors.
How about that protein?
It is basically a high protein content flour, and it allows for a type of pasta, type of dough that has is stretchable, and it's perfect for the type of usage and the way we make it with the extrusion.
Can I put the flour
in? Yep.
Basically, we have a machine that is called extruder. It has a hopper and a mixer behind, and we mix the semolina flour with water, eggs. It could be fruit, vegetables. So you basically puree vegetables and fruit, and that's where it becomes fun because you can flavor all your pasta. That's why we make the spinach and the beets and the squid ink and so on and so forth. I think in Italy there's this idea that pasta is kind of the protagonist versus the sauce. In America, I think our guests tend to like the heavy sauce.
Now it will take about 7 minutes to mix.
I think the key is to combine the right shape with the right sauce and the right ingredients. For instance, you know, the fritti mare, which is the seafood pasta with mussels and clams, it tend to go well with the long noodle because you can tie all together well. I always think about the rigatoni, which is the tube pasta, and that is obviously hollow inside. It allows great for a sauce that is meaty, where maybe some of the meat goes inside the noodle, and then when you get that bite, you get the meat inside the noodle, and it's just a nice blend.
Convivio Italian Artisan Cuisine is one of several businesses in the Bridges of Carmel Retail Complex near 116th Street, Spring Mill Road, and US 31 in Carmel. Sound Expeditions is an audio soundtrack of Indianapolis, created by Michael Kaufman. Kaufman directs special projects and civic investment for the Health and Hospital Corporation of Marion County. He asked a variety of musicians to interpret a part of the city using original music and natural sound. Curious Mix contributor Kyle Long introduces us to Dina El Safar. She's an Iraqi American musician based in Bloomington, Indiana. She's a classically trained viola and violin player, but she's best known for her work with the Middle Eastern music ensemble Salam.
I'm Dina El Safar, and my recording is called Interactions with Nature. I recorded it on the Indianapolis Central Canal towpath, which is an interesting, beautiful green space that exists in the middle of Indianapolis. And I was just looking for like a green space within the city, a place where you might hear birds calling, crickets, frogs, things like that. I found what I was looking for. What I did was I brought a whole bag full of instruments that I thought might blend well with natural sounds. So even though I'm a violin and viola player, I didn't bring one of those instruments. I brought shakers, I brought chimes, and I also brought a wooden flute, and that kind of plays pentatonic scales, and I thought those might blend really nicely with the natural sounds going on around me. And so I spent, good part of the evening out there trying some different things. The recording that we eventually used, one thing I really like about it is somewhere in the middle of it, a couple bicyclists zoom by on that path. I guess it's really popular for bicycle riders as well. And you could also hear traffic noise in the distance, and I think that's appropriate too, because this is not like a nature preserve in the middle of the wilderness. It's just right in the middle of a big urban area. I've been doing those kind of nature recordings where I bring a musical instrument out into nature and just play and kind of create a soundscape. I've been doing that just for my own enjoyment. Interestingly, this kind of all started with I had some health issues back in 2015, and as I got through it, I was sort of thinking back and realizing that stress and anxiety do play a big role in health, and I was trying to figure out how can I reduce my stress and anxiety, and one of the things that just came to me was spend more time in nature. So in 2016, I made a goal of doing 100 hikes, which was actually exhausting because it was every 2 or 3 days I had to get back out there if I was going to meet my goal. And so I did hike through ice and snow and even rain and heat and everything. And it was one of the best things I ever decided to do. And because I'm a musician, of course, I started to notice the sounds around me and how they changed throughout the year, throughout those 100 hikes. So at first, I just always had my iPhone with me. I would just make a recording with my phone on the voice memo. And at first, it was just the sounds of nature. Second, I started bringing in a panpipe, and I'd try to play along with the geese. There's a lot of geese around Lake Griffey near Bloomington, and I just mostly did. It was hilarious. Like, to me, I would listen back and crack up listening to me trying to sort of converse with a goose and things like that. So it just started out of a pure interest and just following my own fascination. I loved the idea of the project, this kind of thinking about the soundscapes of Indianapolis. So it really was very stimulating to me to do this project.
You can hear more of the Sound Expeditions online at bandcamp.com. Kyle Long hosts WFYI's Cultural Manifesto, where he explores the history, harmony, and humanity of Indiana music, Wednesday nights at 8 and Saturday nights at 10. The creators of Summer Stock Stage, a program for middle and high school students in Indianapolis to perform theater during the summer, noticed there wasn't a space for actors at the semi-professional level. Summer Stock Stage and its creators are filling that void with Eclipse, a program for college-age students. Curious Mix contributor Carter Barrett reports.
There's been a huge shift in musical theater away from just sort of these feel-good stories to much heavier, more dramatic, just different kinds of stories and different kinds of storytelling.
Okay.
This is Emily Holloway. She's directing actors for Eclipse's production of Dogfight, which deals with heavy themes, including war and gender roles. A few years ago, Emily realized there wasn't a place for semi-professional actors in Indianapolis. So she created Eclipse, which is a spin-off of Summer Stock Stage. The difference? Summer Stock Stage is for middle and high school students, but Eclipse is for college-aged alumni of Summer Stock to return to Indianapolis and work on a professional show.
So I play Boland in Summer Stock Stage Eclipse's production of Dogfight.
This is Joey Mervis. He plays one of the supporting roles in the musical, and he's one of the semi-professional actors we're talking about.
This is really an amazing opportunity that Eclipse has given us, because Eclipse really has created this home for young professional artists in the theater that kind of didn't really exist in Indianapolis.
So the summer stock actors that were trained in Indianapolis can come back.
I feel like really what's at stake for Indianapolis is it's kind of like an infusion of this young creativity that was grown here. I mean, Indianapolis deserves it. Indianapolis made these people and made these artists. And so I feel like, you know, we all go off and we go our separate ways, but it's so nice to be able to come back and share with Indianapolis what they gave us.
Here, they're working with popular composers and Summer Stock alumni to put on the program's second show. Dogfight is a musical based on a movie by the same name.
Here's one of the leads in the show, Patrick Denson.
So the story is about this Marine named Eddie Birdlace, and it's his last night in the U.S. before he ships off to Vietnam, and they go to San Francisco, he and his Marine buddies, and they are throwing this party.
And then the guys throw a dog fight. Here's Joey.
Which basically is a very mean-spirited competition where Marines would find the ugliest date possible.
You guys are sponsoring a little get-together. The dog fights.
I want in.
You know the rules.
The Marine with the ugliest date wins the pot.
No lookers, no hookers.
So Eddie meets a girl named Rose and
decides to take her to the party and then doesn't realize just how wonderful a person she is. And he has to learn from her.
We came here to have a nice dinner. I just want a little respect from the man, that's all.
We'll have an even nicer dinner if you just leave him be. What's the point of spending all of your time and energy just trying to get even with everybody?
But the creators of Eclipse say this opportunity for early career actors is about something more. They say it's about creating spaces for audiences to see professional theater and to make a place for actors to come back. The two leads of this summer's show, Patrick Denson and Lila Rothenberg, are working actors in New York City.
I feel so happy to give back, and I also feel like they're giving me something, which is a really cool job and a cool opportunity that maybe I wouldn't have gotten in New York to play the lead, and so it's like totally a two-way street.
It's a really great opportunity to work with Emily because she's a New York-level professional here in Indianapolis.
Eclipse co-founder Emily says there's a bit of Midwest insecurity when it comes to the arts. But she says you don't have to go to Chicago or New York to see theater, because it's happening right here at home.
And we just also felt like there was an opportunity within the arts landscape of the city.
Welcome to San Francisco, kid.
For Curious Mix, I'm Carter Barrett.
If you've got 50 cents in 20 minutes, then Curious Mix contributor Abby Terzini has the Indianapolis must-see place for you.
Indy's teeny Statue of Liberty Museum on the Near East Side was built in an alleyway between two buildings. It has an awning with the statue's iconic green color, and on top, its very own Statue of Liberty with a light-up torch on top.
It's been lit for over 2 years since we've opened it. It's never gone out, so we leave it on 24 hours a day. It's a beacon of liberty, I guess.
Owner Tim Harmon has filled this teeny museum from floor to ceiling with 500 pieces of Statue of Liberty memorabilia.
You can see there's almost nothing that has not been made in the image of the Statue of Liberty. Here's a toothbrush holder. Here's a screwdriver. These are lawn sprinklers.
Tim is always happy to give you a personal tour and for only 50 cents.
Here's a bobblehead. Here's a very cool dancing Statue of Liberty. And she's kind of doing a little hula dance, or I don't know, her hips are moving. And it's very cool. That's a popular piece here at the museum, too.
Harmon has collected Statues of Liberty for 35 years. It all started when he found these small rubber replicas of the statue while cleaning out a nearby senior citizen center.
I took those home. There were 18 of them. And I put a row of them on the back of my toilet tank. And I stood back and I said, wow, that looks really good. Because multiples of anything look really good. And then it was no stopping me from that point.
Tim's collection kept growing.
This is a flashlight torch. And when you pull the trigger, it spins and makes red, white, and blue rings, and the Statue of Liberty's on the top. My secretary gave me that probably 20 years ago, and it's still on the original batteries.
One day, he decided to turn the empty building next door to a salvage shop into a museum for his collection.
Everyone collects something. You know, people collect Barbies and people collect pocket knives. So what do you do with these collections? You know, at home, you can only have so many Barbies, you can only have so many teacups, whatever it is.
Harmon has his own political beliefs, but doesn't express them in the museum.
Some people find it very emotional, stirring, and other people just think it's real kitschy. And that's all fine with me. To me, it's just a collection, and I'm really fortunate to be able to share it with everybody. We've never had anybody say, well, that was a waste of 15 minutes and 50 cents.
Even though Harmon has this extensive collection, he's never been to the actual statue. He and his business partner, Julie, took a trip to New York and had lunch nearby, but didn't feel the need to get up close.
I saw it, you know, it was, oh, there it is. Yes, that was enough. That was fine for me, you know. Well, it would have taken the better part of a day, and, you know, I'm not dead yet. So, you know, maybe I'll go back.
For Curious Mix, I'm Abby Terzini.
Curious Mix is made possible in part by the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Brandon Meeks performs and composed our music. And this Curious Mix was created by
Michael Toulouse,
Lee DeNoon,
Terry Border,
Roxana Caldwell,
Anna Sleppy,
Sarah Neil Estes,
Kyle Long,
Matt Pelser,
Abby Terzini,
Melissa Davis,
Matthew Sosi,
Carter Barrett,
and me, Jill Dittmeyer. We'll be back again next week with more Curious Mix.